start at the top of Vayim Dalim Aleph. So, Hani Blei Amarova, Hani Blei Beit Lato, Te'avi Zuzi Lechad, Lemizben Lehu Midei. So, three people, they all engage a single individual to go and purchase something on behalf of them. Then, Mizaban Lechad Minayu, Zaban Lekulu. He goes ahead and he purchases for one of them, I mean, out of these three, then that purchase is good for all three of them. He can't just say that I purchased for one, but rather for all three of them. Velo Amran, that's only true. Elu delotzar v'chotim inish inish lechudeh. That when they handed him the money, they didn't specify, right, and designate each bundle of money for per individual. About tzar v'chotim inish inish lechudeh, the man dezav et zavin. Then if they actually designated individually the monies, then for every purchase for, it works. Man delo zavin, lo zavin. Again, then if he doesn't, if he didn't, he didn't. Now, the Rishonim discuss in general what's the mindset of this individual who's purchasing. Is it that if he specifically goes out and purchases for an individual, maybe that would be enough to be classified as the individual. It's only here where he's after the fact saying, oh, I only purchased it for this individual, that it doesn't work. But if he up front says, I'm going out to purchase for this individual, maybe it would work. And then also this Tzar v'chatim, inish inish l'chudei, right? How designated or how separate does the money have to be? Does it have to be that it's specifically and uniquely designated per individual, or if each individual hands it to him separately, is that already enough to be classified? How together do they have to be to classify as a single unit when he goes out and purchases? But the basic idea is that this shliach can't, if he's made into some sort of agent or representative for all three parties, he can't all of a sudden then decide that I'm favoring one party or I'm giving it to one party. It belongs to all three parties unless up front there was some sort of division between the parties. So now Amrav Papish made the rabba. Hai situmta kanyo. This is an interesting idea here because it has to do with the Torah Takinyanim. But this situmta is a stamp that, for instance, a storekeeper goes in and places on a chavit, places on a barrel of yayin that he is going to purchase it. So, you know, when they go out and they say reserved or sold, right, some sort of stamp that they stamp on it. So the balabait is selling these chaviot of yayin. And then the chenvanim go in and they purchase them. So they want to designate, they want to say, these are mine. So they go ahead and they stamp a bunch of them with their signature, you know, their insignia or somehow how they designate for them. Then, Rav Papi says that is enough to create a kinyan over the chavit. Even though there was no formal kinyan, mitoras halacha, right, of halacha is a kinyanim, that's enough of a kinyan. Now the mayhochusa, what is this a kinyan for? So Rav Chaviva amar lemikna yimamash, that it works entirely, I mean it's a real kinyan. Right, Rabbanan amre lekabuli ale mishapara, that it's not a, right, it doesn't have the tokef of a halacha kinyan, but it has enough of a commitment that one is then subject to mishapara if they back out from this transaction. So the lacha is the kibulei le mishapara. Lacha is obviously like the chachamim, then it's only mishapara. But there is one qualifier which is important. So in a place where people accept this as a formal kinyan, then it works as a formal kinyan. So this situmta, even though mi ikar halacha, it can only work to create a mishapara. Nevertheless, if a place has a minhag to accept such a form of commitment to be a full-fledged kinyan, then it will act halachically like a full-fledged kinyan, which is an important principle, which is the ability in places to generate, outside of the halachic framework, to generate ways that have kinyanim that are accepted by the people, that there's some sort of a social contract, right, that's come chevrati.
Shake their hands.
Right. The Hiskem Chevrati, that in certain businesses, in certain locations, that certain actions will act as formal kinyanim and have a tokef, halachic tokef, as a kinyan.
It's just
doesn't make
sense to be thinking that as being
grossed out. Right. Very important. All right. Now, the Mishnah continued with certain items. It went through a list of craftsmen or artisans or suppliers that were the first. It was before the market pricing had been established. And before the market pricing had been established, then this person wants to contract or sell their items. So how do they go about it? So now, Huyat Chilal Kutzrim, it was the first, right, of the one to have to harvest and to have grain available. Amarov, Rav qualifies this and says, Mechusar Shtayim Posek, Shalosh Eno Posek. depending on how far he is from a finished product, right, will determine whether it's considered yado, that he can contract over it, or not yado. So Rav says that if you have two more stages to complete the processing of the item to its final stage, that's okay. Once you are three removed from the final process, that gap of three is too far, and since it's too far, it's not considered as if you're yado, that you have it already and you can contract on it. Ushmul amar, bide adam, afilu meyad posek. If it's within your control, you can posek as far back as you want in the process, as long as all these processes are within your control, because you can determine the outcome. Aval bide shamayim, afilu achat enu posek. Right, when it comes to something that you have to rely on a Kodesh Baruch Hu or some other factor that does not determined by you, then you can't be posek. So it has to do, Shmuel simply says, it has to do with control. What's in your control, you're allowed to sell. What's not within your control, you can't sell. Rav says, no, it has to do with a numeric distance, which is two or three, right, functions away from reaching the final product. So it's not our Mishnah. Posekim ala gadish. Right, he's allowed to sell it to him, right, and determine the pricing on the gadish, right, and the arimot and the piles that are brought in. Vaha mechusar. So let's see what's missing now. First of all, mechusar mishda b'chamo b'miyabesh to put it out into the sun to dry it out. Ulumidash, right, and to right thresh it on the floor. Ulumidra. This would be zorei leruach, right? That he has to do zorei leruach. He has to take away the chaff or the wind. So now in this case, if you have all those three, right, you're missing three stages till the final step. So Umar says, Kigon, the Shadda Bakamo Biyavish. So where it already was laid out in the sun and it was already dried out. So Rashi says it's still got the same gadish on it. So since it has the same gadish at that time, you can call it gadish, something that was already placed out in the sun to dry out. So the only thing that's left now is the midash and the midra. So that would work for Rav. Ulushmol damar bidei shamayim afila chatein uposeik. What do you do? Yeah, bidei shemayim is midra. Midra is zorela ruach. So you still require a ruach, which is bidei shemayim. Bacha machusar midra to bidei shemayim. He says, efshar benefata, that you can do it with a sieve or a sifter, that you can do it by hand. It's not as efficient, but there is a possibility of doing such a separation by hand, and therefore it would not necessarily be considered bidei shemayim, because you have an alternative that is bidei adam. Right now.
How come zorah is the
So that's very. That's one of the. We did this in Baba Kama. It's one of the Elijah Malachot. Right. So that's one of the Malachot where you have to have. It's an unusual Malachot in Shabbos, where generally we say that Melechus Machshevet is a tour in Shabbos, which is that only if you have Melechus Machshevet can you be Chayav. Generally we look at it as a tour for Davar Shehinu Miskaven, for all these other items. The one area in Baba Kama, which is unique to Shas, where it is a chiyuv, is by Zor LeRuach, and Melechus Machshevus. If he intends to use the Ruach, then it becomes a Melacha, even though the Ruach is Mesayato, and we saw in Baba Kama that even though the Ruach, in general, you're not Chayiv as a Mazik, nevertheless, in Shabbos, you will be Chayav from Melechus Machshevus. So that's one of the unique instances where Melechus Machshevus is used the Chumru, and it's used by Zor LeRuach to take it out of the Gvama stage, or Koch HaChem Rebet Bo, which is why you're patur or patur by nizikin, you're still chayav by Shabbos. Valavit shel anavim. So here the Mishnah says that I'll give a couple of things, like avit shel anavim and then matan shel zitim. So Gemara is going to go through each of these items and explain what are left, much melachot are left, and how could it be, according to Rabbi Shmuel. So there's avit shel anavim, which is basically a bucket full of grapes, where they're heating them up or warming them up together so that they will soften for the pressing. So Mar says, "Vehu mechusar michmar." You have to put them in. What? Vehu mechusar michmar. It's missing michmar, which is placing them together again in these barrels to heat them up and soften them. Viule the beit matzarta. Then to take them to the gat, right, to the press, right. Ulmidash. Then you have to trample them, right. You have to stomp them, press them in the gat. Right, unmingad, and then you have to, seems to be, I don't know exactly how this works, but you have to draw the wine from the press into the, what they call the bore, the pit down below. You have to actually open it up and drain the wine out of the area that was pressed in order to get the wine. So over here you have, right, michmar, take it to the Bei Mitzarat, midash, and mingad. So you have four items that are there. Ketani Reb Chia, la komer shel zeitim. So we're going to see in a second, in the next series in the Mishnah, Chia says there was already a komer shel zeitim. So over here, it was already in the process of being, it was already heated up, it was already softened in the pot or in the barrel, wherever they stored it. So that already, that stage is already passed. But still, you still have three. You still have three issues left, which is the taking it to the gut, pressing it, and then drawing the wine out. Where it says, there's a place where whoever purchased the wine was the one who drew it out of the gut. And so therefore, the seller only had two stages left, which was pressing it, which was bringing it to the gut and pressing it. The drawing the wine from the gut, that was the job of the purchaser. Again, this basket full of olives. Again, michmar, you know, letting them sit together to soften them. To take it to the beit habad, right? To take it to the press. Ulamidash, to actually press it. Ulamingad, and again, to draw the oil from the press out into the location where they stored it. So Tani Rabbi Chiya al Komer Shel Zeitim, this is the Rabbi Chiya that we just quoted above, that he amends the Mishnah to read al Komer Shel Zeitim. So that process is already done. The softening of the olives was done. Haikatzlat, you still have three left, which is taking it to the Beit Abad.
Yes.
That's then actually pressing it and drawing it out. Vachatawasabin, whom Amgid. The place where the one who purchased it is the one who draws it out of the press.
Self-service.
Right, so therefore, you only have two items left, and that's why it was permissible, Ayudei Rav. Right now, Ala Beitzim Shel Yotzer. So there he said before that the Beitzim Shel Yotzer was the clay of the artisan here, but the craftsman who's making the pottery. They used to make balls of clay that were called Beitzim. So he says you can purchase these Beitzim of the Yotzer. So am I. But why is that the case? V'ha mechusar, so what is it missing? This person is missing lefufe. So lefufe is either to roll or to create it into a certain size or to wrap it into a certain size. Right? V'yavushe.
In Hebrew, it's to wrap.
It's to wrap. V'yavushe.
Here he says turning it into a base kibble.
Right. That's what Rashi says. That's why it says magalgal. To shaping it. Right. That's. So Rashi says magalgal, although, but lefufe in other places sometimes also is used a little bit to wrap, and to wrap the baby is lafef. So, and I gave you both.
It's a lafef.
Right. All right. V'yavushe, drying it out, right? Then iuli la tuna, then firing it in the, firing it in the oven, to taste it in the oven, umisraf, to heat it up, ulamepak, and then taking it out of the oven. You have numerous stages that are still left here that require the person to undertake before it's done, so I could be selling it. Says, that was a case where they were already, again, wrapped, shaped, and dried out. So Mar says, there's still three left. I mean, even after you take out the lefef and yavish, right, there's still yulia tuna, the misraf, and the maipak. So you have still to take it to the oven, to fire it, and then to maipak, take it out. So Mar says, Ratu does oven, who the maipak? Again, that the person who buys it pulls it out of the oven. So therefore, there's only two left. All right, now, ala sid, shemish yeshkenu bikivshan. So here, they're making this lime. So this sid that they're making, it's after they can sell it once it's in the kivshan, once it's in the oven. Ba'am chusak. Now it's still missing mikleh, you have to burn it. Ve'afuke, then you have to take it out of the oven. Umeidak, and then you have to crush it right down into a powder. So Gemara says, Vajra goes oven, who daik? So in the place that the person who purchased it, he's the one who crushes it or makes it, pulverizes it into a powder. Ulu shmol damar bidei adam. What about Shmuel says, bidei adam afilo mea poseg. Lama limi shikenu bekivshan. Why is that the stage at which you can sell it? It should be even at an earlier stage, right, beforehand. So Gemara says, don't worry, read the Mishnah, right, once it's ready to be placed into the oven, that's already okay. Right, so then that's already Bidei Adam, and that'll be fine. Now, Vala Beitzim Shel Yotzer, Gemara is going to talk about this Beitzim Shel Yotzer again. Now, Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Poskim Al Beitzim Shel Yotzer, Ad Sheyasu Divrei Rabbi Meir. Meir says you're not allowed to sell Beitzim Shel Yotzer until they're actually formed. So they're made. Once they're made, you can sell them, but before that, you can't make them. So, Amar Rabbi Yossi Bemed Raim Amurim, when is that true? Bafar Lavan. That's true when you're using the white clay or white sand, when you're using an item that is unusual and not easily obtained. Since it's unusual and not easily obtained, right, therefore we say you can't sell it unless you have it. Whereas about Bafar Shachor, when we're talking about this black I don't know, again, sand, clay, whatever they were using to form these items. Right there, Kegon, Kfar Hananya, Vachabruta, and places like Kfar Hananya, Kfar Shikrin, Vachabruta, in these places that was common to have a Farlavan, then a poskima for Bishin Lazer, Yish Lazer, which is basically our Mishnah, when you have an item which has an open market for it, since it has an open market, then we don't need you to we don't necessitate you to have it to sell it, because if you could purchase it in the open market easily, then we consider it to be fungible between the cash and actually obtaining the item. Therefore, you can sell it even though you don't have it in hand. Whereas the Afar Levan, which was much harder to obtain, in that instance, they did not allow you to sell it until you have it in hand. Because that's equivalent to being, right, the Shatta Batsir, when not everybody has it, and you can only sell when you have it in hand. So Amemar, Yeg Zuze Michi Aile Afra. So Amemar used to do it. Once they brought the Afar into the house, once they had purchased or obtained the raw material, then he used to purchase it. So come on, who's that like? Iker Rabbi Meir Hamar Chiyatsu. Rabbi Meir demands that until the Beitzim are actually made, you can't buy it. This is before that process. Iker Rabbi Yossi Hamar Afkabishen Lazeh, Yesh Lazeh. According to Rabbi Yossi, he could have purchased even earlier. Why does he have to wait until he brings in the Afar? So it says, Olam Ker Rabbi Yossi. So it says, it was like Rabbi Yossi that he waited until it's formed, but Ubatre Damemar Ashik Afra. And the place of Amemar, Afra was expensive or hard to find. Since it was expensive or hard to find, therefore people were not sumech dat. What? Idemaile Afra Sam Chedat Devevli Zuzet. So this has to do with the Smicha de Dat, which is a theme that recurs here in Bava Metzia a number of times, which is the idea of Smicha de Dat. Smicha de Dat is not a formal kinyan mihalacha. Smicha de Dat has to do with our understanding or what we believe the parties think when they come to an agreement. And that is that in certain instances, the Gemara indicates that parties will come to an agreement, but they know that it's not a final agreement because there's a chance it won't go through. So when there's a chance that it won't go through, or a chance that it won't happen, we call it that lack of smichut adat, then does not obligate either party. Not only does it not obligate them in form of kinyan, but does not obligate them from the side of mishapara. Right? There is no mishapara because both parties were mudala davar, understood at the time that they made the agreement, that there was a chance that the agreement would fall apart. So we saw that again with matana, matana ktana, matana gdola. And a person thinks that he's going to get a gift. It was a big matanah. He's not sure. You know, he thinks maybe he won't give the gift because it's too big. Then that's not considered a kinyan that he can go to court and demand it. As opposed to if it was a small gift, then he was sumech dat because he believes he's really going to give it. Then he can go to court and demand it. So same thing over here. This idea of smicha de dat. Here they come to agreement about supplying him beitzim. Now, if their afrar is very expensive and not always easily obtainable. So what is the, halachically, they both understand, at the time that they make a commitment or put the money down, there's a chance that this transaction won't go through. We saw that earlier, where a person goes out to the fields and he starts purchasing from numerous suppliers, right, the fruits, that if he continues to tell them, I'm going to buy it from you, then there is smichut adat, then there is a problem with mishapara, and he has to supply it. On the other hand, if he doesn't go to him afterwards, and he never tells him again, we say there's a lack of smichut adat, because the person puts down money with numerous suppliers, and he'll just say he found someone better, and he went with that other individual. The same concept, again here, that appears a number of times in Bava Metzia, is that when you contract together, or agree together to do something, where there's a chance that the people back out, and that's a normal part of the relationships or business expectations, in those instances, that lack of smichut adat allows people to walk away without any problems. But if there is smichut adat, then it becomes a finalized transaction through that smichut adat. So that's exactly what Rabbi Yossi was, Amemar was describing over here. He was using Rabbi Yossi, but he was talking about that it all has to do with smichut adat here. It has to do with his city, right? The questionable stage was obtaining the afar. So once I cross that stage of obtaining the supply of the afar, then you could have smichut adat. So it was prior to that point in time, even if they came to an agreement for the supply, they both knew that they could walk away from it. On the other hand, because right, there was a chance that he wouldn't get it. Once he has the afar, then the assumption is that there's smichut adat, because you've gotten over the hardest stage. Once you pass that hardest stage, then the agreement is binding in terms of smichut adat, because he's relying on you. And if he's relying on you, then already there's a mishapara if you walk away from it.
What's
the difference between smichut adat and gemirut adat? So the Chazanish says, it's a little two-line Chazanish, he says that smichut adat has to do with the side of the purchaser, and gemirut adat has to do with the side of the seller. So that when you're trying to generate gemirut adat, you're trying to have the seller really agree to sell it. That is, gemirut adat is actually giving over the item. the other hand, smichut adat is from the side of the purchaser, that he really intends to purchase this item. Which will work well in the instance that smichut adat is really, right, is really relying, that it's the purchaser, is he really intending to purchase? Does he really think he's going to purchase it? Whereas griyat adat is the mocher, has he concluded to sell the item? That's the way Chazon Ish describes the difference in these two. Right now. So that is, Sumech Dati gives the money. If he low, Lo Samcha Dati does not rely on him. Right? So Rashi says, Lo Samcha Dati means the Chol Echad. Neither one of the parties is finalized here, but Chuzer, right, would not be Mekabel Mishapara. On the other hand, if they are Sumech Dati, then each one of them would be Mekabel Mishapara because the intent is to complete the transaction at this point, and that intent is enough to generate a Misha Parah. Tosfos points out over here, it's very, very, very interesting, Tosfos, that Kfar Shichin B'Chavotah, Af Pishen L'Zeh Yesh L'Zeh, says, Lo Mairi B'Afro. Over there, that part of the Gemara is not talking about the, you know, the sand or the dirt that the clay that they use, the Am Chusa Shaloshu, because that's already three stages behind. But he says they're actually talking about the beitzim themselves. Mashma. Tosfos confirms this, that Yesh Shar B'Shuk the beitzim. It must be that there was a market for beitzim. That there was an open market. The shuk had a market for beitzim. So even though, which Tosfos says this is, seems strange, that there is no market for gderot, even though for actual pottery or finished pottery, right, there is no open market, but yet there is an open market or a shuk for beitzim. And therefore, Al Pishin Lazeh, Yesh Lazeh, applies to these beitzim, but would not apply to kederot necessarily. So that's one answer that Tosfos gives. The other one is, she says, and why is that okay to sell the beitzim? She says, beitzim, the inyan kederot, kein kutot mochrei tvua. That the beitzim for making of utensils is the equivalent of kutot for those that sell tvua, which we saw before, that lukot, they work together, or they interchange with each other, they're able to borrow one from the other, that they're a unique class of individuals that work together. So these beitzim are the same way, even though the finalized product that they wrote are not, but these beitzim, people exchange them, borrow them, exchange them. Inami, he says, afilu ein shar, yachol li'ot ha'choshim ki yishlo, kifisha derech yotzrim, ti'yazveh mehadaday sheish beharbeh mehem. So the other possibility, he says, is not that there's an open market for them, that there's a shuk for them, but rather there was the clay makers club, and all those that were in the guild of the clay makers, and that guild, they all was traded between them, they were a common product between them, therefore they were interchangeable and they were able to exchange them. So either way, those has to create a reason why we could say Afapinjen, Yesh Lazeh, in these cities we say that it's okay to exchange these beitzim, right, to exchange these beitzim. He would not, Tosfos says that in these cities, we weren't talking about the Afar, which is what really what it sounds like from the Brisa beforehand, but nevertheless, we're talking about the beitzim, but how are these beitzim then interchangeable in these cities? So either it has to be that there's an open market for them, number one, or it has to be, like we said before, by the Kutot, that people exchange them, or there's a free exchange of these items between different parties. And now, the Gemara continues. Bosikimol ha-zevel koyimot ha-shana, that he's allowed to sell dung all year long. Now the Tanakhama says, you're allowed to sell it all year long, and then the Chamim said, came back and said, almost identically to what the Tanakhama says, right? There was, listen to the way it says, ein poskimol ha-zevel imken ha-italo, Zevo Bashpa, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. But before that, you had the Tanakam who said, Posukma Zela Vel Toyma Tushana. And then afterwards, you had the Chachamim, Chachamim Matirim. Right, so the Chachamim are the Tanakamas. So that's basically what the Gemara's question is. Chachamim, I know Tanakama, same as the Tanakama. Amarava, Yimota Kshamim Mika Benayu. It's the winter time that is the difference between them. So the Tanakama literally means Koyma Tushana, means all year long, you can sell it no matter what. Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, no, either you have it, right, or you don't have it. Then the Chachamim come along and say, no, Chachamim Matirim, Apo Pi Shein Yesh Lo, Ein Lo Yesh Lo Achirim. When's that? That's Bi Yomot HaChama. That's in the summertime. In the summertime, when everybody has their, right, Zevel's been out there for a while, it's rotted already, and it's all good, ready to be dung and fertilizer. There, in the summertime, that's true. So that's available, and therefore there's a market for it, or you can exchange it. It's dried out. I don't know, it's dried out, it's ready. Rashi says, in your calf. To rotted it, b'nishof b'motak shamim, that was stomped on and stepped on, and whatever they need to do to make it into fertilizer. Nasa zevo, that was already completed. That process is already completed when you get to the summertime. In the wintertime, that's still going on, and therefore it would not be. So the difference between it, b'nai was the wintertime. According to the Tanakhama, wintertime you could still sell it. According to Chamim, you may not sell it during the wintertime. Right now, opposing imo kashara gevura. So it's an interesting part of our Mishnah, which we had a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda in the Tanakhama. That is, uposik imo b'shara gevura, that he can establish a relationship where that he will always get the cheaper price. That's what it is. The relationship is that he will always get the cheaper price. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af pish lo pasak imo b'shara gevura, yechol amar, ten li kazeh, ten li ma'utai. So Tanakhama requires you to specify or stipulate in the transaction that you will get the lower price. Rabbi Yehuda says that's built in, as long as it's not stipulated otherwise, right, then that is built into any transaction is that you expect to get the lower price. So now, the Gemara wants to understand this, machlokas. How gabra, de'ayiv zuzay lin dunya, this individual, he was, went ahead and purchased or put up money to purchase a dunya, right, for, this is for the woman that supplies the, you know, jewelry, whatever supplies the woman's going to bring into the, right, to marriage. So he goes ahead, this individual is going to marry this woman, puts up the money, he did it on behalf of his father-in-law. His father-in-law gave him money, and then he takes the money, and then he contracts to get this these items for the his future wife. And then, the soap, zal nedunya. In the end, whatever he contracted for, the price of that item went down. So Atala came into Rapapa. So they went to Rapapa, and he wants to obviously back out of the transaction. He wants to rescind the transaction because he wants to now purchase it at the lower price. He doesn't want to be committed at the higher price. So Amalei, if you stipulated in the beginning, right, such a agreement that you would always get the lower price, then go ahead, take today's price, which is the lower price. Vilo, if you never stipulated at the time that you contracted, shaku kamikara, then take it like you originally agreed, which was the higher price. So Amalei Rabbanan Rapapa. So Rabbanan said to Rapapa, Vilo Pasak. Right, if he doesn't agree, Shakuk Mikara, why should he take, why should he have to take the original higher price? Mautninhu, Umaut Lokonu. These are money. The only thing that they exchanged over here was money, and money is not a Kenyan. So why does he have to take the higher price? So Amalei, Ananami. I also didn't mean that he was locked in, you know, with a Kenyan that he can't back out, but the Kubele Misha Parakam, you know. I'm talking about not right. Marut are not konot, fine. But there's still a Misha Parah here once you put up the money. So I'm not saying to him, you have to take it at the higher price. I'm saying if you don't take it at the higher price, you're going to be subject to Misha Parah. So basically, you should take it at the higher price. Gemara says, Ipasak Shar Gvoa. Right, if they agreed to give the cheaper price to these things, Mocher Kahadar Pei, Makabo, right, so then the If they had established that it was like the Shurabur, then the Mochar Kahadar Day, Kabbal Olay. So then if the Mochir backs out of the transaction, then he's the one who's Mekabal to Mi Shifara. Right? Mekabal Olay Mochir Mi Shifara. Because the Mochir here is the one who's disadvantaged, because the price is now dropped. So he's the disadvantaged, he backs out, and he's the one who's going to get the Mi Shifara. Ilo Pasak, right? If they do not make this agreement, then Lokeach Kahadar Day, then if Lokeach backs out, Mekabal Olay Lokeach Mi Shifara. And Lokeach is the one who gets Misha Parah, which is our instance over here, which is that when the price dropped and they did not have the stipulation, then he's got to pay the original higher price. So here, if the Lokeach wants to walk, he's going to take a Misha Parah. So I'm really Ravina the Rapapa. Umimai dirabanan hi depliga le dirab shimon. Right? How do you know that the author of this position in our Mishnah is the Rabbanan that argue on Rabbi Shimon? Damre ma'ot lo kanu. Because they're of the opinion that ma'ot are not enough to create a kinyan. And nevertheless, ipasak kishar gvoa shakul kida hashta. Vilo pasak shakul tamidi kara. How do you know that our Mishnah, you have Rabbi Huda, who clearly states that you do not need to make such a stipulation, that it's built into the transaction unless stipulated otherwise. Whereas whoever arguing Rabbi Huda, which is the Tanakhama, says no, that you have to actually, ipasak imo kishar gvoa works. If you stipulate it, then it works. If you don't, who is the author of that opinion? So the assumption right now, right, of the Gemara, the assumption of a Papa is that it's the Rabbanan are the authors of that opinion. The authors of that opinion, because we had a machlokas between the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon earlier in Perek HaZahav, and there we said their machlokas is actually premised on whether Ma'ot Konot or Ma'ot Lo Konot. So the Rachamim believe that Ma'ot are not enough to be Konet, whereas Rabbi Shimon says Ma'ot are Konot. So basically what the Gemara is saying is, it's clear here that the way Rav Papa is explaining it, that it's all, it's an issue of Misha Parah. It's an issue for Misha Parah. It's Ma'ot, Lo Konot. Right? The Ma'ot are not creating the Kinyan. So what's Rav Papa basically saying? That the author of our Mishnah here is the Rabbanan. So it's the Rabbanan who are authoring our Mishnah who say Ma'ot lo konot, and therefore, right, what he's saying is when you reverse your position, you're therefore subject to Mishnah Para. He says, how do you know that's the position of the Rabbanan? Maybe the Rabbanan agree with Rabbi Yehuda. And the author of that position is actually Rabbi Shimon. Now, if it's Rabbi Shimon, you have a problem that Rabbi Shimon believes Ma'ot are konot. So then why is it only simply it's a Mishnah Para? Maybe it should be subject to more than Mishnah Para, right? That's a full-fledged Kinyan over here. So where it says, no, Dima, Rav Shimon Yedamar, Ma'ot Konot, right? Maybe it's, he says Ma'ot Konot. B'chi Pasak Yishar Gval, Shakil Ki Lahashta. Ilo Pasak Shakil Ki Lekara. Mishom, Dekani Lehu Zuzay. I mean that you, Rav Papa, are establishing on your opinion, based on what you saw with the Chameh, the Rabbanan asked him, that you think the whole issue here is a Mishnah Para issue. Maybe the issue is that it's a Kinyan, it's a full-fledged Kinyan issue, and it's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. That's the problem. Rabbi Shimon says, Ma'ot Konot. So if Ma'ot or Konot, it depends on whether you stipulated in the, right, in the contract or the time that you created the Kinyan, whether you're allowed to take the lower price or you stuck with the higher price because you made a Kinyan at that moment. So maybe that's the issue here. It's Rabbi Shimon and not the Chachamim. So if that's the case, then maybe the Rabbanan. Then if the opinion of the Rabbanan would be Ben Pasak, Ben La Pasak, Kashil Kedahashta, then they would agree with Rabbi Yehuda, right, because that you would take Kedahashta. The data are Danish atara zila, because that exactly when people think of it, they think about the lowest price when they contract over time, which is an important factor here. We're going to see in a second. When you contract forward, there is a gap between the purchase and delivery. And whenever there's a gap between the purchase and delivery, a person has in mind that whatever the lowest price is in that period of time, that's what I am going to accept. Now, why does that make a difference if Rabbi Shimon is the author versus the Rabbanan? Because then, if you sign that opinion to Rabbi Shimon, and the Rabbanan agrees to Rabbi Yehuda, then Rabbi Yehuda becomes the halacha. And then Rabbi Papa shouldn't have paskind, right, that it has to do with whether they stipulated it or not. That should be an automatic stipulation like Rabbi Yehuda. Versus, if you think the Rabbanan authored that, the Tanakam, or authored that part of the Mishnah, then halacha would be like Rabbi Papa that has to do with whether you stipulated it or not. So that's, Rabbina's question to Rabbi Papa is, how do you know, why are you so certain, right, that it's the opinion of the Chachamim, that's the Tanakama, and not Rabbi Shimon. Samarlei. Imor damar Rabbi Shimon b'chad taro, b'trei tare mi amar. So he says, even Rabbi Shimon, who believes, right, that there is a kinyan of ma'otir, you have the inability to retract for lokech, here we're talking about the buyer, to back out, that's only when there's chad taro, right, when there is one, right, opening or one issue, b'trei tare mi amar. Right? If not, when there's two possibilities, then it's not. Okay, what is this chad taro and trei taro? So if you look in Rashi, it's the widest lines in Rashi down below, the first line there, it says chad taro. Right? So that Imar Damar Rabbi Shimon, he says, the lokech lo matzi hadar bay, right? We have the opinion in the mission, the first mission of Perkaz Ahab, that Rabbi Shimon says, once the ma'ot go, the lokech may not repeal his position, whereas the mocher can back out. Kol mishi biyadu ha-ma'ot, whoever has the ma'ot in his hands, yadu al-yonah. That's what Rabbi Shimon says in the mission of Perkaz Ahab. So he said, the mocher can back out, but once the money is given, the lokech is stuck. So now he's only stuck b'chad tara. K'gon shlo nishtana ashar, that, oh, what's chadar means that either that the market price hasn't changed, or someone who purchases today to get it immediately, and then it was delayed. So that, in those instances, he had no intention, right, to get the lower price. So Rabbi Shimon says, if, when the transaction's happening, one of two things happen. Either, from that time until now, there is no change in the market price, so obviously there's nothing to talk about, and therefore Rabbi Shimon says the bokeh is locked. Or, the possibility is, if you contract with somebody to buy it immediately, it's clear that you have no intention of getting a lower price later on. Why? Well, not like today, we can get a price adjustment afterwards, but rather that when you contract that price, your intention is to take delivery of the item immediately, and not have a price change. Therefore, even if there's a delay in the delivery, we don't say take the lower price, because we know for sure when you contracted for it, you never intended to get a lower price. Whereas, so that's what's called chad tara. Chad tara means that there is only really one change here. One change is either that I contracted forward, so the delivery is forward, that's the only change here, but the market price didn't change. Or the one change here is that you purchased immediately, and there was a delay, but when you purchased immediately, then the market price changed, so that shouldn't affect you because you purchased immediately. In that case, Rabbi Shimon says, lokech's locked. But betray tare, like our Mishnah, what's trei tare? Miyamar, right? Who says that he does not agree? Modehu de choser. That in that case, lokech can back out, vein alav, elav misha para. Now there, he's still subject to Misha Parah according to Bishimon, but that's all. Not that there's a full-fledged Kenyan. Why? Because by trei tare they don't agree. So according to Rabbi Shimon, right, if you want to stay or you want to get out of Misha Parah, then you have to stipulate at the time of the contracting that you want the lower price. Alright, so now what's happening? What's happening is that you're contracting forward for an item. When you contract forward for an item, everybody understands that there's a distinct possibility that the market pricing could change between the time that you contract and the time of delivery. And because of that, the assumption is that, generally, you're going to take the lower pricing. Now, Rabbi Shimon says that in that instance, you still have a Misha Parah on you, meaning that he drops it one level. In that instance, he drops it one level. According to Rabbi Shimon, normally a contract with money would make you into a full-fledged Kenyan. So over here, where there's a possibility that the pricing could change and go down, you say that the Ma'ot are not a full-fledged Kenyan, but they're still subject to Misha Parah. On the other hand, the Chachamim, right, believe that originally, right, that it was also Misha Parah, then they still agree here, according to Rabbi Shimon, that it's still Misha Parah, that you're still subject to Misha Parah, because you're in the same state you were before. Because you handed Ma'ot, you gave money, right, and money doesn't do anything except create a Misha Parah. Over here also, you're subject to Misha Parah. So now, what that does is now, according to that, even Rabbi Shimon would agree in our Mishnah that you're subject to Misha Parah, and you're subject to that change of fluctuation. So, in our Mishnah, no matter who authors it, whether it's the Chachamim or Rabbi Shimon, we're not talking about a full-fledged Kenyan, we're talking about a Misha Parah. So once you're talking about a Misha Parah, we're indifferent. It doesn't matter whether it's Rabbi Shimon or the Chachamim who authored this Mishnah, because they would both agree, betray Tara, in this instance, that you're subject to Misha Parah, the Chachamim are not going to disagree, and neither will Rabbi Shimon. So now, if you don't believe this, that Rabbi Shimon holds that the Kenyan actually changes when you're contracting forward for a supply, then, you can never come up with an instance where the Lokeach would ever have be subject to Misha Parah. Why? Because then the Lokeach is always subject to a Kenyan as soon as he gives the Ma'ot. As soon as he gives the money, according to Rabbi Shimon, that's a full-fledged Kenyan. So how do you ever have a case where the Lokeach, the buyer, will be subject to Misha Parah? Because he's always making a full-fledged Kenyan up front. Unless you have a circumstance where even Rabbi Shimon agrees it's not a full-fledged Kenyan, then you can have Misha Parah and Lokeach. So you say to me, why do you have to have Misha Parah by the Lokeach? Just say Misha Parah only applies to the seller, and there is no Misha Parah. My says, V'chitei ma'ochanami. So why don't you just say, in ochanami, Rabbi Shimon doesn't have a Misha Parah by the Lokeach. V'atanya, we have a braisa where we did this in Perikah Zahav. Mikom makom kachalacha, which this braisa is authored by Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shimon speaking to Ma'isra. There's a lacha, is Abal Amru, Chamim, Misha Parah. Even this is talking about the Lokeach, it's not Lokeach. Nevertheless, right, my mikom makom. What does it mean, makom makom? Lav, loshna Lokeach. Lo shna mocher, mikol makom means no matter what. No matter what means both lokech and the mocher. Kabbalah Misha Parah, subject to Misha Parah. If they're subject to Misha Parah, that means that a lokech has a possibility of coming into a position of Misha Parah. How, according to Rabbi Shimon, can you ever come into a position of Misha Parah if ma'ot are always konot? If ma'ot are always purchasing the item immediately, how could you ever have Misha Parah? Ella, ki kama Rabbi Shimon b'chatara. Rabbi Shimon only says ma'ot are konot when there is only one, right, issue at hand. Either he's purchasing immediately, or the market price did not fluctuate. Betray tare, if there are two changes, which is that you contracted forward, plus, right, the market price shifted, then lo amar, then he says motunakono, because there's still enough uncertainty in the matter of me that the market price can change it, and therefore there's only a Misha Parah there. So that would be the answer, but Papa says, why you will not set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon, to the exclusion of the Rabbanan, because even Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah believes that the issue is a Misha Parah issue, which will be identical to the Chachamim who believe that it is a Misha Parah issue. That meaning that even Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim do not argue in this instance. In this instance, they would both agree that the issue in our Mishnah with Trei Tara is an issue of Misha Parah. If the issue for both of them is Misha Parah, it doesn't really matter who's the author of our Mishnah. Whether it's Rabbi Shimon or Chachamim, they're both going to conclude the same thing. And therefore, Rav Papi says that I'm correct in saying to this individual who contracted on behalf of his father-in-law about the Nidunya, that if he did not stipulate at the time of the contract that he gets the lower market price, he's subject to Misha Parah if he walks away from such a transaction. Both according to Rabbi Shimon or the Chachamim. Doesn't matter whose opinion we are talking about. That's why Rav Papi's opinion.
When Rav Papi says even if you want to say that it's Rav Shimon, then Rav Shimon would only be taken down a notch, so it would be, in this case, Rav Midbar. Who says that, I don't understand what that means, that the Chachamim would necessarily have to say
right. I agree with you that there is that leap, right? I don't know. It bothered me also. Rashi says it explicitly. The Rashi says that. But who adin rabbanim is reitari lo pligin. That seems to be the gist of the Gemara. The gist of the Gemara is that Rabbi Shimon agrees to the Chachamim in this position. Not that he is, that everybody's dropping their position down one notch, but rather even Rabbi Shimon agrees to the position of the Chachamim. That's the way the Gemara words it. So not that the Chachamim changed their opinion, because Chachamim never give status to ma'ot beyond mishifara. So Chachamim believe anytime there's ma'ot, there's mishifara. Shimon, who gives a higher status to ma'ot in other instances, says it's only in a case where, right, there is such a gemiras adat smichut adat, right, that he's giving the money in an instance where it's either immediate or where the market price doesn't change. But then that elevated status of money drops back to the, what we call the core status of money, which is just the mishapara when you don't have that smichut adat. I think that's how you have to read it. Yehuda, of course, then it's not even mishapara. Then there's Rabbi Yehuda's of that opinion that it really is nothing until you.
It really is of the opinion that it's an implicit stipulation.
Right. Correct. Right now, I would remind you that there's a Tosfos on Mem Zayin Amud Bet that talks about the question about the Nisbracha Chiteich Baliyah. Right, that Nisbracha Chiteich Baliyah. What is the incentive for the Mocher to go up and grab those Chitim? He does the Lokeach have the right to back out, right, of the transaction? Does the Lokeach have the right to back out of the transaction? Then that would incent the Mocher to go upstairs and take care of the Chitim. The Lokeach can't walk away from the transaction, still subject to Mishapara, then why would the Mocher be, right, incented to go up and take care of the Chitim?
Who says because the Mocher has the upper hand over there, that he could, if the price improves, he could hold on to
it. Right, so the Tosfos brought that reason, right. So that we give the right, that's what Rashi says. Rashi says that since the Mocher can back out if the price, what we do is give him a right to back out if the price gets better, then he will do something if it goes down, since he knows that he has both sides of the picture. Tosfos didn't love that explanation. And Tosfos, therefore, in that Gemara there, comes to the conclusion that the Rabbeinu Tam on Mem Zayin Amud Bet comes to the conclusion that the either party, the Mocher has, the Lokeach has a right to back out in that instant, even according to Rabbi Shimon. He says, Amar Rav Chisda, Gider Shetu Meshikha B'Mochrim, Kach Tidgu B'Lukuchot, Mashma, Da'av Rabbi Shimon, Itlay Rav Chisda, V'afilo Mishapar Aleka, Kevin Dika Hefse B'Gamre. When there's a total loss of the item, the Lokeach has the right to walk. That's what the Tosfos the Rabbeinu Tam says in the end. That the incentive that's created over here, what the Takanas Chachamim is, that Lokeach can walk when there's nothing left of the item. And that's what's incensed the Mocher over here. Dakach, Torach, Mocher, Matzil. Shalo Yachzor B'Lokeach. The reason that the Mocher is incented to do something over here is because the Lokeach can walk entirely. Lo Yamod, Afilu B'Misha Parah. Afilu Mishum Yuku B'Zula Yachol Afzor B'Lokeach after Rabbi Shimon. Because we know, according to Rabbi Shimon, we just saw over here in our Gemara, that if a market fluctuation, if there's a marketplace charge fluctuation, according to Rabbi Shimon, you can walk away from the transaction. Maybe you might be subject to Mishapara, but you can walk away from the transaction. There's no Kenyan, full Kenyan over here. Tosfos says, in this instance, that's the Takanas Chachamim. And he proves it from our Gemara over here, that we see even in Rabbi Shimon, right, that there is a difference when market price is changing and when the item is gone entirely. So Tosfos said, opposed to Rashi, which Joel was describing, Rashi's opinion, that the Mocher can walk because, right, it's up, prices go up, prices go down, so we give him both sides of the advantage. So it says, what type of incentive? He'll just, okay, so it burnt up in the end. He doesn't, what type of incentive? Why is he incentive? The answer he gives is that the Lokeach can walk when there's a hefsed legamre. That would be according to both Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon. The Lokeach can walk out in that instance, and he proves it from our Gemara over here that Rabbi Shimon changes his mind when there's a change in market pricing. He says that it's not even subject to Kenyan, it's only subject to Mishapara. So clearly, where there's a hefsed legamre, even Rabbi Shimon will agree to Rabbi Chista that you can walk entirely. And therefore, that will be the incentive for the Mocher to take care of the Chitim, because he's scared the Lokeach is going to walk if the Chitim aren't here anymore. Right now, the Gemara continues with an answer, which has nothing to do with what we just said in the Gemara. It goes back to the original question of the Nedunya. Why can't he walk away from the Nedunya? So Rav Papa says he can't walk away because he made a commitment. Right? He put the money down, he's subject to Mishapara.
So because he can walk away.
He can walk away, but he's subject to Mishapara. Right? If he does walk away, which should be the equivalent of he doesn't walk away. Right? Amalei Ravacha Breid the Rav, the Ravashi. V'tipuklei, why don't we just say, the Shliach Shavya Mikara. Well, how was this transaction set up? The father-in-law engages his son-in-law to go purchase on his behalf. So now, who is the purchaser? The purchaser is the father-in-law. So the shliach walks, no big deal. He's not subject to Mishapura. It's the father-in-law who's on the hook. He's the one who's the actual purchaser. So the shliach walks, ain't Mishapura on the shliach, so no problem for him. The father-in-law is the purchaser. What do we say about the shliach? Right? I sent you to do something good for me, and you ended up doing something bad. So he dissolves the agency because he says, you didn't do what I asked you to do. You didn't contract for me on my behalf, and they're for my betterment. You're trying to get into my, right, the negative side for me. If that's the case, you're not a shliach anymore. So therefore, why don't we just say that both parties can walk over here, because the shliach's not subject to Mishapura, so he walks. The mishaleach can say, you're not really my agent anymore, because I engaged you to do something positive, and you ended up doing something negative. So I'm out of here too. And why can't we just say the whole thing falls apart? Because neither parties can be held accountable to the, right, to the seller. So my says, no, this is Amalei B'Targum Zabinu Mazdin. This is a case where that the son-in-law is actually I would call it a broker of some sorts. So what actually happened here is the father-in-law engaged the son-in-law, but he fully engaged the son-in-law, and then the son-in-law is going to go to make money on this off his father-in-law. So that he actually engaged the son-in-law, and the son-in-law is engaging someone else. So when the son-in-law is engaging this other party, he's engaging him on his own behalf, not on behalf of the father-in-law. So when he does that, obviously then he's subject to Mishapura, because he's the one who engaged him.
So what's the father-in-law says, here's $1,000.
Buy me such and such amount of Nadunya. And that's it, the transaction's over. He's actually purchasing it from his son-in-law. Now, his son-in-law goes out then and then purchases it from a third party. And now when his son-in-law does it, he's expecting to make money off his father-in-law. That means that he's a broker or buyer or seller of these items. So his father-in-law is engaging him, not as a shliach, not as an agent on his behalf, but rather as a mocher, right? And then this person goes in there and engages the other party. So when he engaged him, he was the direct lokeach mocher relationship, and therefore he would be subject to Mishapura. Right, new Mishnah. Malve Adam et Arisav, Chitim v'chitim l'zera. And so then, a person is allowed to lend his sharecroppers seed to plant, right, in return for, you know, the chitim back in the back end. B'yoker v'huzlu, obzol v'hukru. It doesn't matter if the pricing changed, meaning that if he gave it to them when it was, right, b'yoker, when it was expensive, right, and or behuzlu, and it went down in price, or bezol behukru, or it was down in price, went up. Either way, you can do it, right? No tell. So then, in that case, no tell mayhem. I skipped the line here. Yeah, I skipped the line. I'm sorry. All right, let me start the mission. I guess skip down. Ma'ave adam et arisav chitim v'chitim lezera v'lo lechol. A person allowed to engage his arisim and sharecroppers, right, to take sav asad to plant seeds in order to get it back in the back end, but not to eat. I mean, then it becomes sab-sa'ah, which is problematic, which we've seen before. You're not allowed to trade sab-sa'ah, because that's rachla. But if it's not specifically for seeding, that is permitted. We'll have to see why. Now, Rabbi Gamliel mavet harisav chitim b'chitim lezera. Rabbi Gamliel actually used to do this, and used to engage his harisim, make sure crops give them the seed, and then they would give him back the seed. But, b'yoker b'huzlu b'zol b'hu kru, no tell mehem k'shar zol. Didn't matter if the price changed, whether it went up or down. Rabbi Gamliel basically offered them the lower price. That means at the time he gave them the chitim, if the pricing was lower, I mean it was cheaper at that time, then when they paid him back at the, right, the cheaper price. Whereas if they went up in price, we say paid it back at the, really here it's the other way around. I mean that the kashar zol for them, right, it should be that they have to give him the least amount. So either they give him a chsav chitim back, right, or if the pricing of chitim went up, then they'll hand him the cash, right, realization from it. Lo mipnei shalacha came, not because halacha is like this, elo shuratzel lachmir latzmo. That's the whole reason this mission is brought, is to show that which Rabbi Gamliel did was only a chumra, and not mi'ikar halacha. So people shouldn't learn from Rabbi Gamliel that that's what you have to do. But rather, Rabbi Gamliel did this because he was machmir on himself. So in Tanur Rabbanan, Malveh Adam et Arisav Chitim B'Chitim L'Zera. So now this is a brisa that says, right, that you can lend a sharecropper seed like our Mishnah, but now qualifies it, not like our Mishnah. Malveh Adam et Arisav Chitim B'Chitim L'Zera. Shalom Yarad, when he didn't already enter the field. Yarad, if he already entered the field, the Suwer. Tanur wants to know, Mashna Tanur Didan Lo Kom Aflik Ben Yarad Ben Yarad. How come there's no qualifier in our Mishnah? Mashna Tanur Baro, why does the Tosefta have to come off of Ben Yarad Ben Yarad? Why does he have a qualifier and our Mishnah does not have? So Amar Rava, Rav Idi Asperle and Yave, that Rav Ad explained to me this, the difference between the Braisa and the Mishnah. But after the Tanadidan, In the cities or the places, the locale where the Tana of our Mishnah lived, Arisa Yahi Bizra. So the who supplied the seed? The obligation to supply the seed was on the sharecropper. Therefore, Ben Yerad, Uben Lo Yerad, whether he, when he goes down to the field, he doesn't go down to the field. Kama Deloya Bizra Matzi Misalikli. As long as the sharecropper does not show up with the seed, the Balabait can throw him off the field because he's not considered to be engaged, right, in the process or finalized the transaction that he's actually going to work the field until he shows up with the seed in the field. Bikicha Nachit. So at that point, the Batsir Mahacha Kanachit. So now, this is an amazing concept, which is that because at the time that you are offering him the seed, you are not yet engaged in the process of being an Arus, which is not a sharecropper. Now, how does a sharecropper work? A sharecropper works is that you divide up, they get a certain percentage of the field, the outcome of the field, the output of the field, and the Baal Bayit gets a certain percentage. Now, that is percentage is determined up front, they make an agreement, and the sharecropper goes down based on their agreement to the output of the field, and that's permitted. Now, if before the sharecropper becomes a sharecropper, meaning in agreement, then you could stipulate, you can agree on any percentage outcome. You guys can decide between you what is the breakdown. So now, in this instance, where there is, he has to bring the seeds, the sharecropper has to bring the seeds, that means that the engagement hasn't begun until he shows up the seeds. Now he says, I don't have seeds. So what does the Baal Bayit do? He lends them the seeds. Now when he lends them the seeds, what he can do now is adjust the output percentages. Since they're not engaged yet, he's not charging him for lending him the seed, he's just basically saying, if I have to supply the seed, then the percentage outcome will be different. Right, the output, instead of getting 20-80, we'll make it 30-70, we'll make it, instead of 30-70, we'll make it 20-80. So you'll get less percentage than before because I am now providing the seed. So since that was done beforehand, then the whole agreement now is based on that stipulation. So that's why he's allowed to do it. But the Atra, right, the Tana Bara, the Atra, this place, locale of the Braisa, Mari Ari Habizra. In that instance, the owner of the field must supply the seeds.
In the beginning.
Right, in the beginning, he supplies the seeds. So Ilo Yarad, if the individual, the sharecropper, has yet to enter the field, I mean, he hasn't done anything with the field, plowed the field or done anything with the field, then the Matzim Salik, therefore, since he can disengage from the sharecropper, he can stop the transaction, then Kikanachit, the Batzim Hakinachit. So if they agree at that point in time to do something, then what they're doing is adjusting the percentages of the output. Again, it's similar to what our Mishnah is doing, which is that now it's pre-agreement. It's pre-agreement. We can adjust the output agreement, and he could just say, listen, I have a better field than other people. I'm going to give you a different percentage output. Even though everybody else around here gives seeds, and when they give seeds, they give this percentage output. This guy can say, listen, I'm giving you seeds. If you want to be on my field, I think my field's better than those fields. You have to take a lower percentage. That he can do. Iran, but if the sharecropper is already engaged in the field, the lo matzi masalik, at that point the Baal Bayit is not allowed to remove him, and he's obligated to give him the seeds, then asur, because then if he gives him the seeds and says, give me something in the back end, he's not adjusting the output percentages, he's basically saying to him, pay me back saw b'sa'ah, and saw b'sa'ah is asur because of avak ribit, right? So that'll be a problem of avak ribit. So it's conceptually very important, right, that the difference here is a saw has to do with what your relationship. I mean, obviously it's not darach halva'ah, then it's not a question. If you lend a saw and you're expecting a saw back, then that's a problem. And that's exactly what happens once they're already in the field or once he's already engaged. But in pre-agreement, you agree to your inputs or your investments in this agreement change, you can also change the output percentages, and that will not be classified as repeat. That has to do with our agreement on how we are investing together. And since we're investing together in this way, we can change the output. If I provide the field plus the seeds, you'll get this percentage outcome. If I provide just the field and you provide the seeds, then you'll get this percentage outcome. That's not repeat. That just has to do with our agreement as partners in this project. So that's the difference between the Tana Bara and the Tana Didan. Right? Tara banan, Omer Adam Lechavero, Yovani Kor Chitim, Vekotzetz Lo Damim. So now, a person can say, lend me Chitim, a Kor Chitim, and then they set the price. They go into the market, and they say, what is the price in the market today? Huslu, right, then if they went down, Noten Lo Chitim. Right, if they go down in value, then you can pay them back a Kor Chitim. He says, here's your Kor Chitim that I borrowed. Hukru, if they go up in value, you can say, Noten Demehem. Then he can give him the cash. Meaning, because if they go up in value, he'd rather keep this Kor Chitim sold in the market, get more money, and then pay him back the cash that he borrowed. So Gemara says, right? Halo katatz. Didn't they decide originally? They said when he elected the Kuruf Kedim, they assigned a monetary value to that amount. Right? So that's the amount. So then he says, the Tana is saying he can change the money, he can pay him back. If it goes down in price, he can pay him Kedim. Then why did they bother to set the value of the Kedim? They set the value of Kedim because they expect him to get paid back cash. So how can you move around? So now, I'm going to change this off your mark. Imlo katsats. If they did not assign a monetary value at the time of the agreement to lend it, then who's lo notel chita? Who grew notain to mehem? If it goes down in price, he says to him, here's your kur chitim. If they go up in value, the chitim, meaning that he can realize more for these chitim, then he can pay him damim. Because in that case, the yad of the buyer is up the upper hand because he lent him a kur chitim. So when he lent him a kur chitim, right, then he has to what? Give it back. But our fear is what? Shema Tityakir, maybe it'll go up in value. That would be a problem of Rakmi B to Busa Basas. Now here, in this instance, what do we afford the buyer? We afford the buyer the opportunity to pay back, either settle in cash or settle in Chitim. But settle in cash and Chitim to his advantage. So if he does that, then there's no problem of quote unquote lending Sa Basa because he's not getting necessarily a Sa back in the back end. He might get cash back when it doesn't go in his favor, for the lender's favor. So that again it would be permitted, but that gives the borrower that opportunity, by giving that borrower that opportunity, that it becomes permissible, as opposed to when he's katsats damim, the expectation is that he's going to pay back that value. I mean, he's going to pay that cash value back. It shouldn't be relevant to what happens in the market price, because he actually lent him money, and when he lends him money, you got to pay back the money that he lent you. Right? We'll stop over here.